702 Motoring.
It's now 25 minutes to 3 o'clock, and 702 Motoring is brought to you by Audi Freeway Plan Extension. I see that the fuel price is going up tonight at midnight. Brace yourselves. The price for 93 and 95 octane petrol will go up by 4 cents per litre, and then illuminating paraffin by 21 cents. And then motorists will pay between 23 and 27 cents more for diesel. So this announcement was made on Sunday, and it takes place midnight tonight. Just be aware, you're going to be paying a little bit more when you fill up at the tank. We join Nicole Lowe now. He's the technical editor of Car Magazine. And of course, we take your calls on 011-883-0702 if you have particularly a technical problem with your car. And Nicole is best suited to give you advice where to start looking. He joins us now from Cape Town. So the lines are open to you on 011-883-0702. And you can SMS as well on 31702. Good afternoon, Nicole.
Good afternoon, Azania, our listeners.
So we've been talking about fuel and this increase that's taking place. And interestingly, you looked at a related subject. So the maintenance cost comparison between a petrol and diesel vehicle. What did your findings reveal, Nicole?
Yes, Azania, we got this interesting email from Christopher Chandler in Durban, and it's also covered in the November issue of Car Magazine under the Tech Mail section. Mm-hmm. And he posted the question to ask, if you look at long-term maintenance cost, which is better, a diesel or a petrol engine vehicle? And the example he chose was, if you choose a 3-liter V6 turbo diesel and equivalent 3-liter turbo petrol V6 of the same manufacturer, and you would run them up to 300,000 kilometers, so therefore outside Motor Plan and so on, which one will work out dearer, the maintenance costs? And I just want to take a step back on that, because 10 years ago, most petrol engines were naturally aspirated, i.e. without a turbo. Mm-hmm. But at the time, all diesel engines, most of them were turbo diesel. And also back then, the service intervals for turbo diesel engines used to be 7,500 kilometers, 10,000 kilometers, so very short service intervals for turbo diesels. Because of the fuel quality we had back then, and also the oil specification used in those vehicles. Whereas a petrol engine naturally aspirated, you could go up easily to 15, even 20,000 kilometer intervals. Mm-hmm. So back in the day, a petrol engine used to work out cheaper maintenance-wise if you just to conduct general service interval servicing. Mm. But today, the modern petrol engines are also very complex. They also got turbochargers now. But the service intervals of the turbo diesels are now also much longer. They're almost equivalent to the petrol engines now. Oh. So we also see about 15, 20,000 kilometer service intervals. Mm-hmm. So if we look just at servicing costs between the modern turbo diesel, turbo petrol engines, it wouldn't be a lot different. Yes, you have to fit spark plugs to the petrol engine, which you don't do in a diesel, but even the modern spark plugs, the platinum tip ones, can last 100,000 kilometers. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't really come into it. So I would say servicing costs, just the normal services outside warranty, would work out fairly similar between the two. Where the problem comes in, though, is when you get failure of components or systems in these type of engines, because the turbo diesel, they use high precision injectors, they use a high pressure injector pump, they've got glow plugs. Even a turbocharger on a turbo diesel normally is a variable geometry turbo, whereas you get fixed geometry turbos on a petrol. So even the turbocharger will be more expensive. So when you have a failure of one of those systems on a diesel engine, the cost to replace or repair those components can be a lot higher than petrol engines. So I think that's where the risk lies. So to answer the question, servicing costs, general servicing as per the service intervals would be fairly similar between a modern turbo petrol and modern turbo diesel. But when it gets to failure of related components and systems, then the turbo diesel will work out a lot more expensive than the petrol engine.
Wow, that's interesting. Just the variables that you looked at. So which car did you look at, by the way? Which make? Can you disclose that?
No, we actually didn't look at a specific make. It was all in general. But it would be the same for all makes.
Okay.
And the interesting thing is, you do get the same capacity, the same layout, the same turbo engine for turbo and petrol in most manufacturers. You can look at the back of Car Magazine. For instance, BMW, you will get 2-liter petrol and diesel VW will get a 3-liter V6 petrol and diesel engine. So it does apply to most manufacturers.
All right. Well, let's go to the lines now. Maybe this is what you've been thinking about, a question that you'd like to also pose to Nicole around maintenance cost or comparisons between a petrol and diesel vehicle, or you have your own issue that you'd like to raise of the technical sort. We start with you, Togo. You're calling in Germiston, from Germiston, rather. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Azania. Hi, Nicole. So I'm looking into getting a new car.
Mm-hmm.
My issue is a comparison between a manual and automatic.
So,
with the focus really being on petrol consumption.
Okay.
If I were to get a manual car, and I got, and it's got, say I'm comparing between the turbo, a turbo engine, and the normal, I don't know what you would call it, and then compared with the automatic, the turbo, and the other one, what would the difference be in terms of petrol consumption?
All right.
My biggest concern right now. I don't know if I'm making sense.
Yes. No, you are. Nicole, any thoughts on that? Does the make of what she's considering matter?
Yes, if fuel consumption is your main concern, then a diesel engine would always result in better fuel economy than a petrol engine. If we look at manual versus automatic, back in the day, the automatics were had a lot of slip in the gearboxes. They were all torque converters. Then they also used a lot of fuel. They also had fuel ratios. You would get like 3 and 4 and 5-speed automatics. On the modern vehicles, though, the automatics are actually equivalent and sometimes even better when it comes to fuel economy than the equivalent manual, especially when you get to these dual clutch systems, for instance the DSG and VW if they speak, those are actually more fuel efficient than the manual equivalent. Sometimes the automatics also got more gear ratios than the manual, and that also results in lower fuel consumption. So I would say if you do a lot of stop-start driving, I mean, then the automatic is the obvious choice. And if it's only on fuel consumption, you can really choose either. I would even say that the modern automatic is sometimes even more fuel efficient than the manual.
Okay, thank you so much. That was very
lovely. Yes, thank you so much for that question. Never really thought about the comparison between automatic and manual. Lovely. Next we go to Ari. Ari, you're calling from Four Ways. You have a Mahindra question.
Yes, thank you, Nico. Mahindra XUV 500, the W8. It's an all-wheel drive. I'm asking, my wife is wanting to buy one, and I've not seen one on the road. Am I allowed to ask your opinion about that?
Mm-hmm. We've actually got the front-wheel drive version on test as a long-term test in our office, and the test will be published in the next issue, so the November-December issue that will hit the shelves in about a half a month's time, 15 days' time. And we ran it for 20,000 kilometers, and it actually, we were very impressed with it. We didn't get any mechanical issues with it.
Okay.
Very little rattles. The guy that actually, it was his long-term test car, he lives on a farm. He goes to a farm every weekend, so the vehicle has seen a hard life in the 20,000 kilometers. And I must say, it actually impressed us quite a bit. So from what we've seen on our test car, I don't see any problems with the vehicle.
Mm. Okay, well, the fact that there's a few being sold, is that not a problem?
Mm.
I think the problem is just it's an unknown, the Indian make Mahindra. There aren't many dealerships out there. It's always a bit riskier. I mean, you pay less for what you would pay for equivalent with a brand.
You're getting a lot of value for money,
but also remember, when you get to resale values again, then it will also be a lot lower than the existing popular brands. So just keep that in mind. The total equation of cost is sometimes a bit different if you work it out, cost to how much you paid for it and how much you will get back for it after 5 years.
So just
keep that in mind. But I, from a product point of view, we were actually quite impressed with it.
Right. Okay. Ari, I hope that answers your question, helps you decide.
No, it does. Thank you.
All right. So that's Ari in Four Ways. And Richard, you're out in Alberton. You have a Ford Ranger.
That's great, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a Ford Ranger 3.2, and it gets serviced at Ford, but I think they're using a very thin polysynthetic oil, and it seems to create a bit of a lift and noise or a tepid noise in the motor, especially on startup.
Nicole, is his analysis correct?
I'm not sure what the specification of oil is for that engine. It's obviously a multi-grade or half synthetic or full synthetic. I know for fuel economy purposes, the manufacturers tend to go for something like 10W30 these days, or even 5W30, because the viscosity is lower and then you get sort of better fuel consumption because there's less friction in the engine.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the spec is of the oil in that vehicle. The normal spec would probably be around a 10W40. I would say it is best to keep with the manufacturer's spec, especially when you're still in warranty, because if you find out you've been running a different viscosity range than is specified, then you will lose your warranty. So would it actually result in noisier valve train? I'm not 100% sure in that. I don't think. I would be more concerned sometimes what I've heard in older engines, if you go with a very thin oil or low viscosity oil, it can lead to oil consumption, but I haven't heard the relationship between noisy valve train and thin oil as such.
Okay, because it's obviously serviced by the agent, so they're putting in what they need to put in, but I was just wondering if it could be damaging the engine. It's got about 90,000 k's on the clock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it shouldn't. If it's all, it should have been tested for that oil. So I would rather stick with it. If it's outside warranty, we can talk again. But inside warranty, I don't want to play around with that.
All right.
100%. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Richard. We'll take more of your calls after the break. My guest this afternoon, as we often do on Tuesdays, is bring Nicole Lowe, the technical editor of Car Magazine, onto the show to answer your motoring questions. And he assists you with the technical sort. More after the break.
TV. 702 Motoring.
We have only a few minutes left, so let's get to the remainder of your calls. It's 12 minutes to 3 with Nicole Lowe. Mabule, you're out in Gesina. You say you have a car battery question for Nicole. Good afternoon.
Afternoon to Nicole. Yes, I got a Q7 and the battery is a few months old. So the car is well serviced and so on. So recently I parked it for just over 3 weeks at the airport. And when I came back, it couldn't start. So I wasn't sure up to what time, how long should you keep a car before to avoid it not starting. So you must have someone who's saying every week and every 2 weeks. So does Nicole have an idea on that?
All right. Nicole?
I would say a modern car with a new battery should be able to be parked for a month and then be able to start. Obviously, when the car gets older and the battery gets older, that time period will come down. It also depends on the parasitic losses on the battery. So it's interesting in this case that you said after 3 weeks, it wouldn't start your vehicle. So I would, number one, just get the battery checked out to make sure that the battery is in a good condition. There isn't a cell dead or anything in the battery and that it's fully charged. And then also let the auto electrician just measure what is a parasitic loss when the car is actually locked in that state. Because there's a specification, a milliamp draw that's allowable, which will then prevent the non-start issue you had if the draw is within specification. If there's like an aftermarket alarm system, which we sometimes see on older vehicles that are aftermarket, that sometimes draw too much current when in that parked state. So my general rule of thumb should be new car, new battery. It should at least be able to be parked for a month and still start.
Right. There you have it, Mabule.
Okay.
Thank you for your question. And Paul in Melville, you drive a Mahindra.
Yes. I just thought I would kind of offer my experiences with the Mahindra XUV 500.
Uh-huh.
I've got one that is 5 years and 11 months old. I'm a natural history filmmaker, so my vehicle spends its time either driving on the road or driving in the bush.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't managed to get it stuck yet. It's the two-wheel drive version, like Nico was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I've got 130,000 kilometers on the clock. The thing is so economical, it's almost embarrassing. The kind of primary things that have gone wrong with it, they changed all of the brakes at about 34,000 kilometers, and they changed one headlight at 48,000 kilometers. Other than that, it has been completely reliable, and it is an incredibly comfortable vehicle to drive. But the suspension is very noisy.
Mm. How many kilometers do you have on the clock now, Paul?
It'll have its 130,000 service within the next 3 weeks.
I see. So fuel economy is so cheap, it's embarrassing.
And I can tell you, the last time I did a long-distance trip, I got 5.83 litres per 100 kilometres.
Wow. All right. Well, I hope that Ari is still listening. Thank you for your feedback, Paul.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. And he's been driving that Mahindra XUV 500 all-wheel drive. So lovely review, Nicole. Feedback.
Yes, it's nice to get feedback from the people out there. As you say, we drive them for up to 20,000 kilometers. It's nice to get a feedback even longer distances than that.
Mm. James, you're out in Northcliffe. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, Azanda Nicole. Just a quick question, yeah? Mm-hmm. I'm a sales rep, and I do about 100,000 Ks every year.
Ooh.
Now, I'm due for a new vehicle now, and I just want to find out, what is your opinion in terms of the best SUV in the 300,000 range budget range for this kind of application? I'll listen to the answer on the radio.
So 300,000 Rand is the budget?
Plus minus.
Oh, okay.
40,
and it has to be an SUV. Ooh, Nicole.
It needs to be an SUV for babies and so on.
Well.
But I'll listen on the radio. Thank
Fantastic.
You
Thank Bye-bye. You, James. Your thoughts, Nicole? What would you suggest?
Yes, best is to pick up an issue of Car Magazine and go to the back where the price lists are. Mm-hmm. And then you can sort of, there's a list that lists them for, according to price and to type. So there's a crossover SUV section where you can actually compare, look at 300,000, your budget, and just go down there and look at what is available. Mm-hmm. If it talks about long distances, I mean, 100,000 kilometers a year, that is massive distance. For,
right.
So fuel economy would probably come into it. Comfort would come into it. So I would suggest look at what is available, that is a diesel, first of all, for your fuel economy, and also for comfort sake, the best is maybe to go and drive a couple of them in that price range, and just to compare. And obviously you mentioned kits, so size would also be important. Now, yeah, 300,000, there are quite a few options there. I don't want to list all of them. I think it best is to just go to the back of Car Magazine, choose your five favorites. Also look at our top 12 best buys for SUVs, which are also listed there. And that will give you a good example. As I always say, when you go and buy a vehicle, you can listen to all the advice in the world, but in the end, you have to be happy with your decision, because you're going to walk down the garage every morning, open that door, and you need to decide. You need to feel happy. So we can give general advice, but in the end, the decision would have to be the owner's.
Absolutely. Mohammed, you're our last caller this afternoon. You have a question about a BMW X3.
Oh, that's correct, Zania. Good afternoon to you.
Welcome.
And to your guest, Nicolo.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is on BMW X3 2004 model. The kilometers is 170,000 kilos. When you engage into second gear and third gear, the car is jerking a hell of a lot. Is it the gears or is it something else? I'll listen on the radio. Thank you.
All right. Nicole, any questions for him?
Yeah, it sounds like a gearbox issue. It must be automatic, I presume. So if he's talking about its second and third gear is jerking a lot, I would take it to a gearbox specialist. It's outside warranty anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But take it to a gearbox specialist. They can plug in their tool and read the codes from the gearbox. That will give you a good indication what the problem might be. It might be a solenoid or shift actuator, or it might be something simple like when last was the oil drained in that gearbox, oil replaced.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's also got a service interval. But as I say, yeah, a gearbox specialist would be your best
stop. All right. There you go, Mohammed. There's a question on Twitter. Please ask Nicole to advise Mazda 3 Hatch or Kia Rio.
Yeah, they're both nice vehicles. You can't go wrong with either of those. That's why I say you can choose the one you like. Kia Rio, Mazda 3. It all depends on the powertrains as well.
Yes.
I think the Kia Rio, I think the Mazda might have a bit more power. The Kia might have a bit more space inside. But they're fairly reliable. They should all do the same job fairly well. So between those two, I can't identify a bad one.
Yes. It just depends on what he prioritizes. Speed or space, as you say. There are differences, but both good value. Thank you very much, Nicole.
Thanks, Azania.
Thank you. That's our Nicole Lowe, the technical editor for Car Magazine. So on Tuesdays, expect to hear him or our Jacob Moshoko as we explore just a variety of topics around vehicles, around cars. And it was really great to hear around the comparison, the maintenance cost comparison between a petrol and diesel vehicle.